Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, October 15th. School Board selects Legacy High School as school's new name. Colors are maroon and white. Mascot is Rebel from Revolutionary War era. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The Midland ISD Board on Wednesday night voted to change the name of Robert E. Lee High School, ending an 11-week saga that divided the community. The board voted 5-2 for Legacy High School, which will become the name of the senior and freshman high schools. A vote for Legacy of Equality and Excellence earlier in the meeting failed 2-5. Legacy of Equality and Excellence was the top suggestion from a committee put together after board members voted that the school name would be changed. Robert E. Lee High School opened its doors in 1961 in what was then the west side of Midland. Highlights during that time included the winning of 3 straight football championships from 1998 through 2000. Prominent graduates include former First Lady Laura Bush, retired General Tommy Franks, and opera star Susan Graham. The school's colors will remain maroon and white, and the mascot will be Rebels from the Revolutionary War era. During the public comment period, 23 people spoke, 13 for a name change and against Lee, and 10 for keeping Lee or accepting the number one choice from the committee. The renaming issue was a political hot potato. On July 27th, the Midland ISD board voted by a 6-1 decision to rename the school. There had not been any discussions in MISD public meetings about the name of the school. The board followed by creating a citizens' renaming committee to come up with name suggestions. Board President Rick Davis said it was clear that while the committee was asked to make recommendations to the board, trustees retained the ultimate decision-making authority. A 23-person renaming committee on September 17th decided on Legacy of Equality and Excellence as its top selection. Tall City High School was the second selection. 1 week later, they made decisions on mascots and colors. Earlier this month, Midland ISD officials provided information to the Reporter-Telegram that renaming Robert E. Lee High School and Robert E. Lee Freshman High School could cost as much as $3.4 million, according to a preliminary rebranding report. The cost, according to the district, took into consideration the name change and the change in school colors. The cost of the name change only would be $1.7 million, according to that report. Setting off a string of events, which became the renaming process, were opinion articles and reports from Lee graduates, such as former NFL Players Association President Eric Winston and former Railroad Commissioner Michael Williams, who called for a break from the Robert E. Lee origins. Community leaders like Mayor Patrick Payton and City Council Member Lori Blong added their support for the name change. Councilman John Norman also was public about his support for changing the name. County Judge Terry Johnson was against the name change and created a poll after the school board made its decision to change the name. The same conversation about a Robert E. Lee High School name occurred in the East Texas city of Tyler, where the board voted to change the name of its Robert E. Lee High School. In the past few years, boards in San Antonio and Houston also made the decision to change the name of their Robert E. Lee High School. Midland ISD was not the only holdout. A Robert E. Lee High School still exists in Baytown. Midland's Robert E. Lee High School is the only one where the mascot is the Rebel. Midland ISD administration has made changes to the Confederate iconography and culture at the school including the decision in 2017 to stop playing Dixie as part of the school song and the decision to ban the use of the Confederate flag at MISD contests. Consolidation could be boost for shale sector. Report of ConocoConoco talks has analysts examining how M&A market will play out. The story was written by Miller McEwen. Reports that ConocoPhillips and Midland-based Concho Resources are in merger talks caught the attention of Permian Basin residents this week. While Concho did not respond to requests for comment, John Roper, Director of Media Relations and Crisis Communications at ConocoPhillips, told the Reporter-Telegram by email, quote, "We don't comment on market rumors," end quote. If the reports of talks between the two companies are accurate, Bloomberg said an announcement could come in just a few weeks. The speculation comes amid continued expectations of consolidation among exploration and production companies. Quote, "There is currently a broad consensus from analysts, investors, and management teams that consolidation is healthy for the U.S. shale sector," Andrew Dittmar, senior M&A analyst, market research at Enverus, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. Continuing the quote, "Fewer, larger companies should be able to leverage synergies and economies of scale to drive profitability and shareholder returns. The form of this consolidation, from what we have seen, is all equity, low premium offers that require both the selling company and the buying company to believe in the long-term benefits of the deal," end quote. Quote, "Because the economics of the deal will need to play out over several years, it is important to have a well-positioned company, meaning a healthy balance sheet and plenty of attractive inventory on both sides of the deal," he said. "The 5 to 10 leading companies in the Permian Basin are prime candidates under these criteria and are likely to be at the epicenter of shale consolidation. Even for corporate deals that span several regions like Occidental Anadarko, Chevron Noble, or Devon WPX the Permian nearly always plays a role. In fact, every multi-region shale deal over $1 billion since 2014 has included at least some Permian leasehold, a testament to the region's key place in U.S. shale," end quote. Grant Schwartzwelder, president and owner of OTA Compression, OTA Environmental, Kimark, and president and founder of Petro Growth Advisors, told a Reporter-Telegram in an email that, quote, "Unconventional development requires significant large capital to do optimally and continually. The majors are able to do this more than any other company, so you should see this merger activity grow. Consolidating acreage and operations will also make lease operating expenses lower and operations more efficient due to the synergies of a tighter acreage footprint. Unfortunately, this will result in more headcount reductions since employees represent the largest expense bucket," he said. Like Dittmar, Stephen Ho, oil and gas analyst at Global Data, believes the Permian will factor in merger and acquisition activities. In a release reacting to the Devon WPX merger and the Chevron Noble merger, he wrote, quote, "Permian Basin will continue to be the engine of the U.S. unconventional production, but for now the outlook for its full recovery is uncertain and ultimately tied to the post-pandemic reality. Cities have reopened their activities, and there are positive signals about the recovery of the economy. This has supported an increase in gasoline supplied to the market, but this is somehow misleading as it coincided with the summer months when demand for transportation fuels is usually higher. With COVID-19 cases still increasing in some states of the country, mobility will continue to be challenged, effectively putting a cap to oil demand," end quote. Ho said that during a downturn, it's not unusual for companies to look out for potential acquisitions and companies should be careful with their expenditures. Quote, The recent deal between Devon Energy and WPX Energy involves a $2.6 billion all-stock merger and clearly aims at consolidating and strengthening their combined acreage in the Delaware Basin. They can become the fourth biggest unconventional producer, putting them right behind EOG. It should also be noted that the merger helps to dilute Devon's exposure to federal land acreage, which faces uncertainty if presidential candidate Biden was to win the U.S. presidential election and effectively ban drilling in federal lands. Another interesting recent deal related to the Permian is Chevron's acquisition of Noble Energy for $13 billion, one of the largest acquisitions in 2020. Although other international portfolio of assets were relevant in the acquisition, Chevron was also attracted by Noble's Permian acreage of 92,000 acres that are in close proximity to Chevron's acreage in the area, especially since Chevron's plan to acquire Anadarko fell through last year. Although Chevron recognizes Permian as its greatest cash-generating portfolio, the company is maintaining discipline in capital spent in the Permian assets as response to the market condition and vowed to focus on efficiency. End quote. Neighbors want city to do more to end protests. As crowds of protesters lined up in front of Pastor Bob Fu's home for a second week, his neighbors in Polo Park are growing frustrated by what they perceive as a lack of action by the City of Midland and Midland Police Department. Demonstrators arrived on a bus outside Fu's residence on October 5th and have continued to protest each day since, holding signs and passing out pamphlets accusing Fu of being a spy for the Chinese Communist Party. Fu has denied the allegations and said he believes he is being targeted by Miles Goh, an exiled Chinese billionaire who claims to be a whistleblower for corruption within the CCP. A woman who has lived three blocks from Fu for 15 years said she has been scared to death since the protests began. She spoke to the reporter Telegram on the condition of anonymity because she feared the protesters or others involved might target her and her family. She said she normally takes daily walks past Fu's home on Bishop's Castle Drive, but has stopped walking or driving in the path of the protesters. She's seen them park at neighboring restaurants and apartment complexes and walk to Fu's house in the morning before leaving in the late afternoon, she said. Quote, my question would be, how long are they going to stay, and is there anything the city can do, she said. There was a monthly Polo Park Homeowners Association meeting scheduled for Tuesday night, at which local law enforcement were expected to address the protests and hear residents' concerns. The meeting was canceled without explanation, according to posts from residents on the social media app Nextdoor. Quote, if there's nothing that can be done, just tell us, Fu's neighbor said. When reached by phone at the number listed on the HOA's website for the board president, the person who answered hung up when the reporter Telegram identified itself as a news organization. No other board members could be reached for comment on the meeting. Fu's neighbors now plan to turn to the Midland City Council to air their grievances about the protests. Residents posted on Nextdoor that they plan to speak during the public forum part of the council's meeting on Tuesday. Other Midlanders are planning to show support for Fu by organizing a prayer rally at the Horseshoe. The event is meant to, quote, stand in solidarity and support of Midland's Dr. Bob Fu, according to the Facebook page for the event. Quote, we stand for religious freedom. We stand with Dr. Bob Fu. We stand for our community, the page states. The prayer rally is planned for 11:30 a.m. today at the Horseshoe Amphitheater. Play about baby Jessica is released at 33rd anniversary of her rescue. The story was written by J.C. Lewis. The collective experience of then 18-month-old Jessica McClure being rescued from a water well in West Midland has been made into a play. Playwright Philip Santos Schaffer said that the incident didn't happen in his lifetime, but it was something he was aware of growing up in Los Angeles. He was born in 1991. Jessica fell down the well on October 14, 1987, and was rescued on October 16th. The play is performed by phone, with actors giving a performance over two nights with five acts. Baby Jessica's well-made play is based on the true story of the young Jessica McClure to inspire conversation about fear, hope, culture, and memory. Schaffer said that he wanted to do theater since he was a child. He received a bachelor's in fine arts from Hofstra University and went to Columbia University for graduate school. While getting his master's in fine arts in dramaturgy, his thesis project revolved around creating solo performances that were interactive. He got the idea for Baby Jessica's well-made play in 2015 and finished the draft in 2018. As Schaffer was planning to launch the play, the pandemic happened. He said he turned the show experience to one happening over the phone. Quote, "For a really long time, I thought it happened during my lifetime, but I always knew about it," he said. "I don't remember learning about the Baby Jessica story, but I always remember it being something I was always aware of as a kid." End quote. The release of the play coincides with the 33rd anniversary of the young McClure's rescue. Quote, "These moments that capture cultural collective, where everyone pays attention, is so fascinating to me," Schaffer said. "The way these things are in our cultural subconscious and become a part of our common vocabulary. And I think Baby Jessica is a great example of that. In part of the play, one of the things that come up is, do you remember learning about Baby Jessica?" He said if people can't recall the specifics of the girl's rescue, the language that arose around the event and shared collective of rooting for one good thing to happen brings people into the play. Schaffer said that he remembers watching the made-for-TV movie about the rescue and the impression of the possibility of falling into a well stuck with him. Quote, "As a kid, I think it's hard not to go like, is this going to happen to me? Am I going to fall into a well? It's the same idea that kids think that they're going to encounter quicksand any given day," he said. He started collecting items from the time of McClure's rescue, such as the People magazine from October 1987. He said knowing the real details was valuable to deciding on the feeling of the play, even though the play focuses more on people's experience of watching the rescue and about him watching the TV movie with his brother and mother. Schaffer has been working with Walk Up Arts, which is producing Baby Jessica's well-made play. Quote, "A big thing that has been true for us as a theater company is that we have always tried to lean into the reality of the resources we have," he said. "If we don't have access to a big theater space or access to high tech, what does it mean to make a show that doesn't need those things or is meant to take place in an apartment?" End quote. The play is performed for one audience member at a time over the phone. Quote, "It's really exciting to have it down to the one-on-one level because it feels like a real distillation of how close together can interaction and theater exist and can they sort of be the same thing as a conversation and a play," Schaffer said.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, October 15, 2020. Hanging with Dennis. Eli Wisnowski left and his cousin Collins Harrison play in the warm weather Saturday afternoon at Dennis the Menace Park. The high on Wednesday was 97, a record for the date. The forecast for today is 74, 5 degrees below normal. Early voting continues. Early voting for the November 3 general election continues through October 30 at 5 voting centers across Midland. County Annex, 2110 North A Street, through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through October 23, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. October 24, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. October 25, 1 to 6 p.m. October 26 through 30, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Calvary Assembly of God, 908 Johnston Street, MCPL Centennial Branch, 2503 West Loop 250 North, Fairmont Park Church of Christ, 3818 North Midland Drive, St. Paul's Methodist Church, 4501 Thomason Drive, through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through October 23, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., October 24, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., October 25, 1 to 6 p.m., October 26 through 28, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., October 29 through 30, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Early voting totals. Monday, 3,259. Tuesday, 3,330. Mail-in ballots, 1,853. Total, 8,442. Total through 2 days. 2008, 5,077. 2012, 5,987. 2016, 8,226. Registered voters in Midland County top 90,000. The number of registered voters in Midland County has topped 90,000, according to Carolyn Graves, Elections Administrator for the county. The number of registered voters has grown by 1,000 in the last week, as the Elections Office is still receiving applications from the Texas Secretary of State's office. The number of registered voters is more than 15,000 greater than 4 years ago, and around 20,000 more than 2012. Registered voters in Midland County. 2008, 74,396. 2012, 70,556. 2016, 75,472. 2020, 90,543. The number will change as there are more applications to enter. Source, Midland County Elections Office. Texas Size Garage Sale continues. Texas Size Garage Sale, the annual fundraiser for Meals on Wheels, continues today at 407 East Scarborough Drive. There are two sessions, 9 to 11 a.m. and noon to 2 p.m. Because of social distancing guidelines, the sale was expanded to 6 days, and only 100 people will be allowed in each session. The sale continues today, Tuesday, and October 22. There will not be a 50% off day, but the nonprofit might do that in December or January, said Tracy Renton, Development Director for Senior Life. City to close dog parks for maintenance. Hogan Dog Park will be closed today, and Beale Park will be closed Friday for weed spraying and fall maintenance, according to a press release from the city spokeswoman. The parks will be closed 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Flu shot clinic set for those 60 and older. A flu vaccination clinic for residents 60 and older will be held this month at the Midland Health Department, Kingsway Mall, 3303 West Illinois Avenue. The clinic is 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays. The Health Department also provides clinical services by appointment only, 8:15 a.m. to 3:45 p.m., Monday through Friday. For more information or to make an appointment, call 681-7613. Revival is planned. Kingdom Encounter Weekend, described as a revival of repentance and restoration, is planned for 6 p.m. Friday through Sunday at 6612 Farm to Market Road 307. The event is being presented by Kingdom Encounter Ministries, according to an email from one of the organizers. For more information, text REVIVAL432 to 94090.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter Telegram on Thursday, October 15th. Arthur William Wybush passed away on October 10th of pancreatic cancer. He was 68 years old. He was born in Waco, Texas on October 22nd, 1951, to Arthur Roger and Julia Audiger Wybush of Lubbock. He is survived by his wife of 46 years, Cynthia Ann Tice Wybush of San Angelo, and their two sons, Eric Tice Wybush and husband Michael Kerkorian of Amarillo, and Joseph Spencer Wybush of Midland. He is also survived by brother Roger Ewing Wybush, and wife Rose Marie of Plano, and nephew Landon Ewing Wybush and wife Jennifer of Plano. Services will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, October 17th, at Christ Church, located at 5501 North Medgift Road in Midland. Please observe community guidelines regarding masks and social distancing. Gifts in Art's memory may be sent to St. Gabriel's Hospice of San Angelo, located at 3006 West Beauregard, San Angelo, Texas, 79601. Funeral arrangements are by Harper's Funeral Home of San Angelo. Deborah Combest Harbor, age 65, passed away on Saturday, October 10th. She was born in Midland to Wesley Tyson and Clessie Jordan. She is preceded in death by her parents, her previous husband, William Combest, and her brother, Ronnie Bishop. She is survived by her current husband, Darrell Harbor, her brother, Larry Tyson, her son, Greg Stroud, her daughter, Tasha Long, and her stepson, Todd Combest. She also had 8 grandchildren and 1 great-grandson. She will be cremated through American Heritage Cemetery and has declined any type of memorial service. We will be having a small reception at a later date. A special thank you to the staff at UT Health in Tyler, Texas, Home Hospice in Midland, and Elle and Chrissy Hewlin. In lieu of flowers, please donate to the Cancer Research Center of your choice, Home Hospice WTX or the VFW. Grant Gulker, age 37, of Midland, passed away October 12th. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Thursday, October 15th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Grant married Tessa on August 1st, 2011, in Las Vegas, Nevada. Grant and Tessa made Midland their home and started a family. Grant is survived by his wife, Tessa, and children, Avery and Graham, parents Eddie and Martha Gulker of Abilene, and Greg and Trina Dean of Midland, grandparents Johnny and Linnell Gulker of Andrews, and Bobby and Frances Longshore of Andrews, sister Edie Dean of Midland, brother Clay Gulker and wife Addison, brother Chris Young and wife Stacy, brother Brian McKissick and wife Alicia, sister Jenny Jones and husband Andre, and many more aunts, uncles, and cousins. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. On Saturday, October 10th, Jason Theodore Velarde, loving father, son, brother, and uncle, passed away at the age of 37. Visitation will be held Thursday, October 15th, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. A rosary will recite at 7 p.m. Funeral services will be held Friday, October 16th, at 1:30 p.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Jason was born on June 17th, 1983, in Midland, Texas, to Teddy and Janie Velarde. He had a passion on making music that many know him as Crazy Jay. Jason is preceded in death by his grandparents, Roman and Celia Velarde, grandfather Manuel Martinez, and niece Bella. He is survived by his children, Devin, Valerie, and Lainey Velarde, grandson Andreas, parents Teddy and Janie Velarde, sisters Missy Martinez, Crystal Gamboa, brothers Anthony Martinez, Sam Velarde, several aunts, uncles, cousins, nieces, and nephews. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, October 15th, 2020, front page. Hospital details surge in cases by Michael Merlo, MMERLO at OAOA.com. During a virtual hospital briefing, Midland Medical Center hospital officials spoke about a surge of COVID-19 patients in and out of Ector County. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippins spoke on the spike during the briefing. "We have seen over the last couple of days a pretty significant spike in the load of COVID patients, not only in Ector County, but also the surrounding 17 counties that Medical Center serves, which is putting a strain on our resources locally," he said. He said that during a citywide call Wednesday morning, that Odessa Regional Medical Center has also seen an increase in cases. Tippin said that he is having daily calls with regional partners about trends and cases, and said that it's important that those out-of-county patients are able to be transferred back to their home counties to get care, because if they can't send them back, it'll bump other patients down the line. "We have patients in here from New Mexico. We got a call from Perryton, Texas this week, which is almost in Oklahoma, to transfer patients to us because Amarillo and Lubbock are full," he said, adding that he wanted community and regional partners to be safe and make sure they are masking up. As of Wednesday morning, Medical Center hospital officials said the facility had 34 in-hospital patients. 13 out of those 34 patients are from out of the region in the 17 counties that MCH serves. "The number that we're really watching is the county has to stay at 15% or less COVID bed availability, and today we're right at 14%, so we're really teetering on that edge of that 15% number, and that's not just us, it's countywide," he said. The occupied COVID-19 bed percentage has climbed substantially in the last week, Tippin said. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said that the hospital does have a plan for isolation diversion, because if they don't have room for those isolation-type patients, then they can't accommodate them. If we can't get it under a reasonable number from control, then it kind of leads into our surgeries and what we can do and the patients we can admit just from our own county, she said. Timmons also said that MCH has an overflow plan, and officials are monitoring that plan to see when they need to activate it. "It's not a new unit. We just open and close it depending on what our census has been," she said. Tippin said nursing homes continue to struggle in and outside of the county. "It's just multi-layered groups of people that are getting sick that need a higher level of care than what's available in their hometown, and that's where we're picking them up." Tippin said, "The goal is to assist the whole region. It all starts at home. It all starts with your kids and your families, just being safe at that level," he said. "I think the worry is we'll run out of beds, we'll run out of ventilators, and then that just rolls into other services. Like if you need surgery, we can't do it because we have that filled with COVID patients, just like we were a couple of months ago. We don't want to get back to that. Nobody wants to get into where the governor or the county judge has to make a decision to close restaurants down. What the data does show is that if you have good practice about distancing and masking and hand washing, it does control it." On the net, tinyurl.com/WBVLL46. City claims sales tax squabble stands with comptroller. County officials remain cautious. By Royal McGregor, RMCGREGOR at OAOA.com. City of Odessa officials held a press conference Wednesday afternoon to explain the city's recent application to the Texas Attorney General's office to claim part of the revenues from the county's sales tax. Officials from the city that spoke were Mayor David Turner, District 2 Councilmember Dewey Bryant, At-Large Councilmember Peggy Dean, and Odessa Development Corporation's David Bouton. Turner explained during the meeting that the City of Odessa's quarrel is with the Texas Comptroller's Office instead of Ector County. The city gave issued notes from the Texas Comptroller's Office, which outlines territorial limits of the County Assistance District, that reads, the district excludes the cities of Goldsmith and Odessa, except for areas in the city of Odessa annexed on or after November 27, 2018. We are just asking the comptroller to be judged by the attorney general, Turner said while speaking to media members. The citizens of Odessa didn't vote on this. It was just the county citizens. They didn't vote on that. It was stuck in there by the comptroller, and there's the problem. We need some resolution on that. Situated in the gallery were Ector County Commissioners Dale Childers, Greg Simmons, and Eddie Shelton, Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths, citizens from the county, and citizens from the city. Childers, Precinct 3 Commissioner, told the Odessa American after the meeting was over that he has a lot of reservations. Childers detailed that any motion from the Odessa City Council should wait as four of the seven positions, which include mayor, are being voted on during this election cycle. Childers, who didn't run for re-election, said his term as a county commissioner expires on December 31st, 2020, and he hopes the Texas Attorney General's office will make a decision by then. The request to the AG was submitted by Senator Charles Perry of Lubbock on October 7th, and the AG has 180 days to issue an opinion. The due date for the opinion is April 5th, 2021. We just have to wait and see what the AG says, Childers said. If we can sit down and draw up some kind of agreement, then maybe we can. I doubt that would happen before I'm out. Simmons, County Commissioner for Precinct 2, spoke during the meeting that he's worried the city would pick areas that have high sales tax revenues to be annexed into city limits, while the county is left with the rest. Our concern is that you pick and choose where you go to annex, and that hits our revenue source tremendously, Simmons said. The county's sales tax has specific spending provisions, which includes law enforcement, road maintenance and construction, and illegal dumping enforcement. When the Odessa American asked if the city would have to abide by those same provisions, Dean said those provisions wouldn't exist for the city. Dean nodded her head when asked if that sales tax revenue could be spent on anything. City officials continuously voiced that they aren't taking any of the money the county has currently collected through the County Assistance District, but would collect sales and tax within any area that was or will be voluntarily annexed in order to provide essential services. We would be able to afford to give businesses services as long as we get the sales tax, Turner said. Our fear is that we will lose businesses and they will move to another city. District 2 Council Member Dewey Bryant said he wants the city and county to have an open discussion. However, in a previous Odessa American article dated December 11, 2019, detailed that Turner, City Manager Michael Marrero, and Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes would meet monthly to discuss mutual concerns. Turner was asked by the Odessa American if those meetings happened, and he said those monthly meetings haven't since March. Turner cited coronavirus as the reason those meetings didn't take place. Relieving hunger. Food Bank receives two-part donation. Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints donates 38,000 pounds of food, $10,000, by Royal McGregor, MCGREGOR at OAOA.com. About 48 hours after Don Martin departed from Salt Lake City, his semi-trailer packed with 38,000 pounds of food, it was unloaded at the West Texas Food Bank in Odessa. The 65-year-old truck driver delivered the food on Wednesday morning. It marked the first of a two-part donation from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. In addition to the 38,000 pounds of food, the church will also make a monetary donation of $10,000 to the West Texas Food Bank. Donations like this, where we don't have to worry about shipping costs, the cost to buy it, or where are we getting a good deal, it's just a truckload of food and that shows up, and that's important. West Texas Food Bank Director of Marketing and Communications, Craig Stoker, said. Martin said before returning to Salt Lake City, he will travel to Dallas to refill his semi-trailer. "This is really the best job I've ever had," Martin said. "The people are super nice. Everyone is very supportive. For a truck driver, it's a great job. The food that was delivered Wednesday was grown on farms owned by members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Stoker said the 38,000 pounds of food and the $10,000 donation would roughly translate to 71,000 meals the food bank would provide. Rachel Hart, 20, of Idaho, said she's happy the food donation will help families in West Texas. "It definitely makes serving a lot more meaningful," Hart said. "We know that we are really fulfilling our time. Our time is being used to help others, and that really means a lot to me." Stoker said that West Texas Food Bank hasn't received many food donations throughout the coronavirus pandemic. He noted that grocery stores are having a hard enough time keeping their own shelves stocked. However, Stoker said he's pleased with that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints could make a twofold donation to the food bank. "We are still not really receiving the huge amounts of food from our grocery partners," Stoker said. "They are working toward a normal operation in a grocery store. There hasn't been that surplus from the grocery stores that we normally see. We've pretty much had to purchase every bit of food that is coming out of our warehouse." On the net, WTXFoodBank.org. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 5,480. Ector County negative, 24,682 out of 30,509 tested, with 347 pending. 106 deaths. Recovered, 4,552. Active, 822. ECISD daily cases, 6 students, 1 staff. Midland County, 4,287 confirmed. 86 deaths. Texas, 805,082 confirmed, with 7,067,676 tested. Total Texas deaths, 16,717. U.S. cases, 7,835,007 total confirmed, and 215,194 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Quick hits. Have you voted? Early voting continues through October 30th. The Ector County Courthouse Annex, 1010 East 8th Street, room 104. Early voting hours are scheduled from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. through Friday, and October 19th through 23rd, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. October 24th, 26th through 28th, 29th and 30th, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. October 25th. 4 other voting locations will take place from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. through Friday, October 19th through 23rd, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., October 24th, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m., October 25th, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., October 26th through 28th, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., October 29th and 30th at Kellis Turner Community Building, 2230 Sycamore Drive, Westlake Hardware Store, 4652 East University Boulevard, the Globe Theater at Odessa College, 2308 Shakespeare Road, and Salinas Community Building, 600 West Clements Street. So far in Ector County, 7,156 have voted. For sample ballots or more information, call 498-4030 or visit www.co.ector.tx.us/page/ector.elections. Coat Drive. Medical Center Health System has scheduled Coats for Kids Coat Drive benefiting the Salvation Army. Gently used jackets or sweaters of any size, infant through adult, donations are welcomed. Drop off at any red Salvation Army barrels at MCH Center for Health and Wellness Mission Fitness, 8050 East Highway 191, Urgent Care, 3001 JBS Parkway, or MCH Clinic, Walmart East. Traffic update. University Boulevard will be closed from Don Avenue to Redbud Avenue beginning the evening of Friday through October 30th. AT&T will be installing new underground fiber cable for communications purposes. Motorists are advised to take alternative routes. Samaritan Heroes. This time of year, Samaritan Counseling Center of West Texas is usually celebrating its Families of the Year and Samaritan of the Year by recognizing the honorees and sharing our mission to provide professional counseling to restore hope and healing. This year, however, our world is much different than in previous years. Out of respect to the community, the center has elected to postpone the annual fundraiser this year. Instead, they will be focusing on creating awareness of who Samaritan is and the vital role they serve in West Texas. Samaritan Heroes is a new program this year to recognize our local everyday heroes. The center will be asking the community to nominate these heroes. Nomination deadline is Friday. Samaritan Counseling Center is a comprehensive outpatient mental health facility located in Midland County. To nominate, donate, or more information, visit SamaritanHeroes.org or call Jose Gaona, that's G-A-O-N-A, at 894-2484. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, October 15th, 2020, page A5. City Council tables again creation of PFC by Royal McGregor. RMCGREGOR at OAOA.com. The Odessa City Council decided to table the creation of an Odessa Public Facility Corporation, which would give council members the ability to work with developers to create housing in Odessa. During the public comment section on the decision to remove it from the table, three people in attendance spoke out against the creation of a PFC. One of these people was Odessan Larry Robinson, who provided the Odessa American with his notes, which included many of his talking points as he addressed the City Council during a regularly scheduled meeting Tuesday in the Council Chambers located on the fifth floor of City Hall at 411 West 8th Street. Robinson detailed in his notes, "The PFC will deprive the schools of much-needed money that they would otherwise collect from an apartment complex within the city. The county of Ector will miss out, as well as OC, ECHD, but of the greatest part will be ECISD. This void will have to be filled by the taxpayers of all jurisdictions." Members of the council responded to the public's concern over forming a PFC. The matter will remain tabled for future city council meetings. The council also tabled the item at a September 22nd meeting after some Odessans expressed concerns regarding the tax breaks to developers, as well as the lack of regulation on what developers built as far as quality and room size, a previous Odessa American article stated. The council approved allocating $850,000 in CARES Corona Relief Funds to Ector County Independent School District for the purchase of devices to facilitate distance learning and technological improvements. ECISD Chief Technology Officer Kelly Wilkes stated during the meeting that the Texas Education Agency will match the donation. ECISD purchased 6,500 Chromebooks, 5,800 iPads, and 1,000 MiFi hotspots. It is very important for our kiddos to be able to work from home or whatever their tablets and computers will allow, District 5 Councilmember Mary Willis said. We absolutely care about our kids. The council also approved a bid awarded to Dennard Electric for the Water Treatment Plant Generator Integration Program project for $488,108. Thomas Kerr, Public Works and Utilities Director, said during the meeting that the old generator was installed in 1982. The council also went into executive session for an hour and 14 minutes to consider pending or contemplating litigation. Other action. Approve of the request by Halliburton Energy Services, owner Multitech, agent, for original zoning of heavy industrial, HI, on lots 1 and 2, block 1, Halliburton Subdivision, second filing, Odessa, Ector County, Texas, south of the intersection of Interstate 20 and Farm Road 1936. Approve the purchase of new fire station alerting, FSA, system with Mach Alert, M-A-C-H-A-L-E-R-T. Approved amending the Odessa City Code, Chapter 4, Business Regulations, Article 4-6, Peddlers and Itinerant Vendors, Section 4-6-9, Permit Required for Peddlers, Solicitors, and Itinerant Vendors. Approved the request by Tabitha McElhaney, owner, for a specific use permit to allow a beauty shop one-chair accessory use in a single-family 3 SF3 zoning district on Lot 21, Block 13, Scottsdale West, 5 Cody Court. Approved the request by Tyler Bradley, owner, S.W. Howell, agent, for original zoning of Light Industrial, L.I., on proposed Lot 1, Block 1, Metal Solutions Edition, southwest of the intersection of Interstate 20 and Crane Avenue. Approved an interlocal cooperation contract with the University of Texas Permian Basin for street services. Approved resolution of amended payment schedule to Apergy to reflect an initial payment of $400,000 instead of $300,000. Approved adopting a new rate review mechanism with Atmos Energy. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, October 15th, 2020, local and state. ECISD seeking partner to turn around Bonham. OA News at OAOA.com. Ector County ISD is looking for a partner to turn around Bonham Middle School, which is now in its fifth year of improvement required under state accountability standards. Alicia Siverson, Assistant Superintendent for Student and School Support, told ECISD trustees during a workshop Tuesday that a request for proposals will go out Wednesday. Under Senate Bill 1882, passed in 2017, districts can go for funds for innovation or turnaround. Superintendent Scott Murray said ECISD will go for support on pre-kindergarten and turnaround for Bonham. Siverson said, if Bonham gets an F rating in 2021 under accountability standards, the Texas Education Agency would have no choice but to appoint a board of managers to take over Bonham and the school district. The school would be closed, she said. The partner application window is October 13th to November 11th. The lone finalist for a qualified partner would be announced January 19th, 2021. Then multiple phases begin that run until the start of school in August 2021. Board member Nelson Minyard said, this is a tough decision because they are releasing a lot of control from the Bonham team. Texas Senate Bill 1882, which went into effect in 2017, encourages districts to use partnerships to improve student achievement with two distinct benefits. Approved partnerships may receive additional state funding for the partnership school, and schools with an unacceptable accountability rating are eligible to receive a two-year exemption from the specific accountability interventions, the board recap said. Partnerships can be innovation partners or turnaround partners. A PK3 innovation partner is needed to provide space to serve three-year-old students that the district's early education centers do not have space to serve. Bonham Middle School is currently in its fifth year with an F rating. If it maintains its F status, the district faces state intervention in the form of school closure and a board of managers for the school district, the recap said. Due to those circumstances, ECISD is going to open the process to seek and rigorously vet potential middle school turnaround partners through a process called Call for Quality Schools. The application window will remain open into November. Applications will be reviewed in November with interviews with potential partners conducted in December. A PK3 innovation finalist and middle school turnaround finalist would be presented to the school board in January, the recap said. Siverson said the minimum contract would be for 3 years and it could last up to 10 years. Murray said the district is anticipating 1,000 three-year-olds next fall. He said ECISD wants someone who can partner with the district on Bonham. He added that they did this in his previous district, Spring Branch, and had two charter schools and they were partners. We want a contract that captures the concept of partnership, Murray said. We want a relationship with an organization that is interested in having a relationship with us. Rather than us and them, it should be we. That could be spelled out in a contract. In his closing remarks, Murray expressed gratitude to every member of the Odessa City Council because while the school board was meeting, the council was too, and voted to grant ECISD $850,000 of CARES Act money to help reimburse ECISD for student devices and MiFi hotspots. As part of this state program, the Texas Education Agency will match this reimbursement, meaning $1.7 million in support for ECISD's and the community's efforts to help all students get connected to school, the recap said. On other items, Murray updated the board on the opening of schools. He lauded the work of the Human Resources Department and noted that ECISD currently has 38 teacher vacancies compared to 352 1 year ago. In terms of enrollment, pre-kindergarten and kindergarten are much lower than 1 year ago, the recap said. Overall, elementary enrollment is down, middle school enrollment is slightly lower, and enrollment in 10th to 12th grade is a little bit higher than 1 year ago. Currently, 38% of students are learning remotely. The remote learning percentages are higher with older students. Several concerns Murray observed were that attendance is down about 2% overall. In secondary schools, the number of Fs students are getting is up 7%. The number of students who failed one or more courses in the first 6 weeks increased from 15% to 40%. Compared to 1 year ago. He said this is clear evidence that students are struggling in this new learning environment, the recap said. Murray added that the COVID slide anticipated from last spring's school closures is showing up in the first round of MAP, Measures of Academic Progress, testing, where math and English language arts are low. The MAP test is given 3 times per year to monitor student growth throughout the year. Murray said without a great learning experience this year, kids will not hit the achievement marks set out for them, the recap said. In his opening remarks, Murray thanked the Players Coalition for its $50,000 grant announced last Friday that will help ECISD expand broadband internet access through the purchase of wireless access points. These new access points will be available at the 25 most economically disadvantaged campuses and will make the ECISD network available within a certain radius of the school, making it accessible to families even when school is not in session, the recap said. On the net, tinyurl.com/yy7v3jrg.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.